Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. This is episode 260, and if this is the first time that you've listened to me, my name is Robert Crane. I'm a Microsoft MVP, also a Microsoft certified trainer, and looking to bring you all the information and keep you up to date with everything that's happening in the Microsoft cloud. Now, we are getting towards the end of 2020. Hopefully everybody's staying safe out there. I think we can pretty much write off 2020. Hopefully 2021 brings some more positive news and effects for people out there. So again, getting ready for Christmas. Hope everybody's still staying safe. And as always, looking to provide you the best value I can here with the podcast. Now, some of the things that I do regularly is look after a community of cloud enthusiasts. You'll find that at www.ciaopspatron.com. And for my musings, technical updates, and things happening in the Microsoft cloud in between these podcasts, please go and visit blog.ciaops.com. Now, what I'd like to talk about firstly is a new Power Apps community plan. All the links, of course, will be in the show notes, so you don't have to worry about where to go and get those from. But the Power Apps community plan is free. It's going to allow you to go in there and start tinkering around with this new Power platform from Microsoft. So you're going to get access to things like Power Apps, Power Automate, a common data service, the ability to connect different sorts of data through custom APIs and work with a number of tools. So this is a low-code, no-code style solution, and I think this is one of the really big opportunities that we have in the Microsoft cloud going forward. It really allows you, if you aren't, a traditional developer, to get your feet wet and start automating processes, build solutions quickly and easily without having to worry about low-level code. So if you've always been wanting to get into the Power Platform and, you know, sort of aren't prepared necessarily to do it in your own tenant or maybe your employer's tenant, then go and have a look at the Power Apps community plan. Again, that will give you a free environment for individual use, allowing you to go in and start developing in this new Power Platform environment. Can't encourage you to go and have a look at that enough, because there's huge amounts of opportunity there for people. Now, lots of stuff in security, as we all know, on a regular basis. Probably the most interesting one is the new Microsoft Pluton processor. So many people are probably familiar with the TPM chip, the Trusted Platform module that is in many laptops today, that allows things like Windows Hello for Business to work and, you know, give you secure sign-on without having to necessarily put your or type a password in every time. But Microsoft is telling us here that in collaboration with AMD, Intel, Qualcomm, they're announcing this new Pluton security processor. And the idea is it's a chip-to-cloud security technology. And actually, it was pioneered in Xbox and Azure Sphere, the IoT side of things there. And what it's going to do is going to give you that more centralized link for security when it comes to the actual hardware or the devices that you are using. So again, I'll put a link to the article in there. You can go and have a look and read about that. But again, think about embedding, you know, the security down to a level in the silicon to, again, reduce any threats that may happen at that level. And again, attackers are looking for, you know, every opportunity they can take advantage of. So having more security brought out in device, I think, is a good thing. So if you are into that, you want to get an idea of what it is, go and have a look. We should expect to see this rolling out in the near future. And it is something that, again, is going to help make the environment and the devices especially more secure. Now, speaking of being more secure, one of the services that I really like is Microsoft Cloud App Security. Microsoft now has what they're calling their Ninja, the MCAS Ninja training available. So This is basically an aggregation of a lot of resources around Microsoft Cloud App Security in one page that you can go through and, again, learn via documentation, learn via video, all these different options. So there's a significant amount of resources here around MCAS. Again, this is a great resource. It'll take you a long time to work through all this. So again, if you are new to Microsoft Cloud App Security, 100% recommend that you start working through this to get a feel for what it is. And even if you are an experienced user of Microsoft Cloud App Security, I still think there's a huge amount of benefit going in here, knowing some of the intricacies around the plot, how to make it work better, do automation, and some of the more advanced features as well. So at the end of the day, this is a a resource that is recommended for anybody who's really serious about security in the Microsoft 365 space. So again, I'll make sure that there is a link to this new Microsoft MCAS Ninja training so that you can go in and work your way through that. Now again, on security, if you're not aware, Microsoft has technology around what they call DLP, Data Loss Prevention. Effectively, this is like an outbound scanning technology to prevent, you know, information leaving the organization, whether maliciously or by mistake. So imagine a tax file number or credit card. You don't want that getting outside the organization via email or being shared inappropriately. So we have policies in Microsoft 365 to allow this to be managed via something called DLP, Data Loss Prevention. Now, what Microsoft is announcing is the fact that DLP will now be extended to devices. So typically, it's largely been around things like email, SharePoint, OneDrive, and so on. But Microsoft is now extending that capability basically to the devices. So we can now make sure that our devices are not, you know, leaking any information, or, you know, there's not any inappropriate sharing of the information there. So again, link in the show notes, go and have a read about how Microsoft is implementing this DLP for devices. The other thing around security, and this has been a discussion point for a little while now, is the fact that with two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, a lot of people have been using the phone, the SMS notification, to receive their second factor for quite a long time now. And again, it is, you know, been a well-accepted method of achieving that. The problem is more and more we're seeing this being compromised. For example, if an attacker is able to, you know, get hold of the phone or potentially take over the actual account and, you know, get the phone number rerouted or reallocated, then that would allow them to get the second factor via SMS. So Microsoft's got a article here about how it's time to hang up on the phone transports for authentication. They're obviously keen to use the Authenticator app on mobile devices. So again, something for you to go and have a read about, have a think about. The limitations are largely around, it is easy to social engineer these days to overcome, you know, what minor security, you know, SMS technology did provide. So if you are trying to maintain a more secure environment, it's something to consider that basically it's probably a good idea to look at having, you know, the SMS being deprecated in favor of, you know, other options that are out there, and there are plenty that are available out there. Now, another really good one I saw that I would recommend is a handy little video here about a new data connector that will provide some health monitoring in your Azure Sentinel environment. Now, the real takeaway from that is that it allows you to easily see the costs of ingestion into the service. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Azure Sentinel, it is a SIEM service, which means it will basically swallow lots and lots of logging data from various sources, third-party Microsoft on-prem and in the cloud, and then run analytics and machine learning over there, looking for threat patterns and then alerting you to that. Now, there are costs involved if you are ingesting data from different locations. So for example, you know, data typically ingested from Microsoft cloud environments comes at no cost, but if you were to ingest data from an on-prem server, then there would be an ingestion cost with that. Now, again, that can be a little bit tricky when you've got lots and lots of different endpoints and what's included, what's not included. So this workbook here is an easy add. It's already there as a template, and it will give you a really good indication of, you know, where the costs of ingestion are coming from, what is included for free, and what basically you'll have to pay for. So again, make sure the link is in there. There's a video. I've also done a bit of a blog post on it as well. So again, if you are using Azure Sentinel, you're a bit curious about, you know, obviously keeping track on the ingestion cost for your environment, take a look at this workbook, set it up, and I think it'll answer a lot of the questions that you have out there. Now, one of the other things, speaking about Sentinel, is the integration that is now available with Microsoft 365 Defender Connector. So this is going to directly connect the Defender environment into your Azure Sentinel. And again, it's got a lot of options here that we can go in and play with and turn on. Again, it's in preview, so you'll find it basically in the data connectors. It's called Microsoft 365 Defender. Obviously, it's in preview. But when you select to add it, you'll see that you can add, you know, events around devices. You can add events around networks that are coming from Microsoft 365 Defender, Defender for Endpoint, and so on. So again, if you're using Sentinel, which I really recommend that you do use, then you can integrate and begin to get even more information by this direct connection now with this data connector to Microsoft 365 Defender. So again, have a look at that. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and review that. Now, another interesting one that is on ZDNet is talking about this supposed, the rumored cloud PC. Now, what that is, if you haven't heard, is basically the concept of a Windows Virtual Desktop board, but for a flat fee per month. So one of the challenges with Windows Virtual Desktop has been the costs have been somewhat variable because it depends on the machine and the networking and how it's set up. Whereas to overcome a lot of that resistance, the rumor is that Microsoft is bringing out a flat fee per month cloud PC, a virtual PC that will be available typically to people who have a Microsoft 365 Business Premium or better style licensing. Okay, so I'll put the article in the show notes. You can go in and have a read of this leaked information to give you better an idea. Now, in my opinion, I think if this does turn out to basically be the case, this is going to be one of the game changers in 2021 when it comes to the Microsoft cloud. It's effectively going to allow, you know, the IT side of the house to provide a, you know, managed, secured PC desktop for users that they can access then on any device. So it's a bit like going back to the old mainframe days in a way, but in this sort of environment, people working remotely and wanting to have more security, I think it makes a lot of sense. So keep an eye on that one. No confirmation as yet from Microsoft, but there are lots and lots of rumors floating out about this cloud PC. And the rumors are also that it is very well advanced and we might see something early in 2021. So again, keep your eye on that. I think it is going to be a big game changer. Make sure that you are across that and aware of what the developments are when they do announce them. Now, obviously, it wouldn't be a podcast without some updates in Microsoft Teams. Again, we've got things like live captions that are attributed to speakers. So when we're in a meeting, we'll get the captions, but we'll also know who is speaking at that time. That's going to make it nice and easy. We're going to have our meetings and calling recordings stored in OneDrive and SharePoint. So we're going to move them from this, you know, different or this separate Microsoft Stream storage location into standard OneDrive, standard SharePoint. It's going to make it much easier to share with that. So basically any personal calls that you organize, the recording will go into the organizer's OneDrive. And if it's a meeting that's run in a channel within a team, the recording will go into SharePoint. Now, there's going to be some retention policies about how long our recordings are kept for and so on. But if you're interested in that, just remember it is moving to OneDrive and SharePoint. And again, the article there will give you more details if you want to go and have a look at that. So we've got Teams Rooms also pushing out now. So we're going to get that capability shortly to allow people to be in a meeting, then break off into another sub room and then rejoin the main meeting when they're ready. We've got things like offline presence status is also making its way to many devices. We've got a new sharing experience as well to make life easier. We've got some additions for education and for first line as well as government as well. So as always, there's a huge amount happening in the Teams environment. I encourage you to go in, read the notes and keep up to date with what's actually, you know, happening in that environment. Now, one of the things that I was really happy about was that there is now a Slido app for Teams. So that means you can run live polls and get, you know, feedback almost immediately. I've been playing around with that, seems to work quite well. So if you are, you know, a Slido fan, again, beware that that is now also available as an app in Microsoft Teams there. Now, something else Microsoft announced recently that I don't see a lot of people paying attention to is productivity score. So we're pretty familiar with something called Secure Score. That's going to give you a security rating for your tenant, but we've also now got a productivity score. So that's going to take a look at the services people use in the environment, the devices, how they use them, and again, provide us some feedback, provide us some ratings as to best practices and comparisons to other people using these environments. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and have a look at all that and get up to date with it. I would certainly encourage you to go in and start understanding that, because remember, you can have the most secure environment available, but it's next to useless if nobody's actually using it and improving, you know, their business and the way they work without, you know, by doing that. So again, don't overlook the importance of productivity score. Go in, have a look, have a play around with it, see what it reports for your tenant. That should be available for you now. Now, with that, again, thank you very much. Hopefully, I've given you a taste of what's happening in the Microsoft Cloud there. We will get into our interview in a sec, but remember, if you do want to contact me, you can do so on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. You can find the podcast at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. You can send an email to me directly, director@ciaops.com. Please let me know your suggestions, what's happening in your world, how you're adopting the Microsoft Cloud, what your plans are for 2021. They'd all be great subject matter for the podcast. So with that, why don't we get into this week's episode? So welcome along, a familiar voice to the Need to Know podcast for this interview. Welcome along, Brenton Johnson.
Oh, it's good to be back, Robert.
I see that your voice hasn't changed any in the time period we've been away, so that's good to say. So what have you been up to in the interim, or what have you seen out there in the market? Are things going well for you and your business?
Oh, things have never been busier for us here, and with the whole work from home, even though we weren't too affected by it, like because everyone was already in the cloud and we didn't have any servers, no VPNs or anything like that, there was still a fair bit of change that people were trying to get their head across, and how do they do this and how do they do that and how they manage stuff. And so we've just been absolutely flat chat. So I'm actually in the process of hiring again. So we're going to put probably two more people on just to keep up with the workload that's happening. And then, yeah, that will be much better. I think at the moment I'm working too many hours just trying to keep on top of everything that's happening at the moment, making sure everyone's happy and productive and all the rest of it. So that's what I've been doing.
All right. So to probably give people a bit of grounding, why don't you give them basically an idea of, you know, your business, what it is, what it focused on, you know, where it operates from. Just give people a bit of context about your business, because we are going to talk about this in relation to the modern device management. So sort of set the scene for everybody, let them know a little bit about your business.
Yeah, no worries. So I run a company called Uptake. We actually ironically started as a marketing company. We're going around, we're a Google partner. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that in the podcast anymore, but now I'm an interviewee. I can do with whatever I want. Well, helping people basically digitally transform back before IT had sort of got their head around what digital transformation was. So in the early days, we're talking about people moving from putting ads in the newspaper to then putting, you know, moving to Facebook and having conversations and engagement with their customers rather than reach and frequency, which was the old metrics. So we did that for a while, but we started to figure out pretty quickly that the Office 365 stack and what was happening there was very, very interesting. So we switched from doing that to switching into IT and talking to people. We couldn't believe the sort of stuff that they were doing for IT. I'm like, this can't be how people run their businesses. This is just insane. It was very, very, you know, everyone was on Windows 7 back then and Windows 10 was just coming out. So we ran around and did a lot of work to figure out, well, how do we get this stuff into the cloud? And ultimately, a software as a service cloud is what we've always been about. So we're all about trying to get rid of servers and move people into software as a service and then manage that for them on their behalf and then help them get the most out of that process. So that's what we got to. We've been a traditional IT company in a sense. We've had RMMs. We've, you know, done all the stuff that all the other MSPs or managed service providers around the place are doing to try and help manage their customers at scale and across multiple customers. But we've sort of landed at a really nice place now with the modern management stack and Microsoft stack, that the technology is there now, and now it's the time to go out and actually start adopting that technology. We don't have to rely on legacy technology anymore as much. Whereas, you know, if we're talking back when I started, it was very, very difficult to manage multiple Windows 10 machines across multiple customers and make all that sort of easy and straightforward for a technician to do and use. So that's my journey up to this date, Robert.
All right. So what we wanted to speak to Britton about was, I suppose, a real world, a real life scenario of a move to using Intune and now Endpoint Manager as the way to obviously roll out applications, to manage applications on devices, and how well that has worked in the real world. And I think probably the place to start, Brenton, would be is, you know, how did you find the learnings to take all this on board? Because I would suggest you would agree that, you know, going from, you know, no Intune to fully implementing Intune effectively is a fair challenge, a fair mountain to get over. So, you know, we did talk about on previous episodes some good resources you have, but just want to cover off, you know, basically how you got yourself up to speed and into a position where you felt comfortable to start rolling this sort of stuff out for customers.
Well, to be fair, it was a bit of a trial by fire. We had a customer who bought Microsoft 365 Business, which obviously enabled Intune for their tenant a long time ago. And then because that run not-for-profit pricing, we just continued to roll that out. We weren't really doing anything with the Intune tenant, but all the machines were enrolled and up to date. So that's probably, if I was going to tell anyone to start anywhere, I'd get really familiar with the enrollment methods of Intune and start enrolling all of your devices today. So we've made a decision in our business now that we don't sell any other SKUs except for the ones that have Intune in them. Because now when you enroll a device, every device that gets enrolled gets added to Intune. Even if you don't do anything with Intune, when you're ready to do it, you don't have to go around and enroll all the devices again. So that would be where I'd start. If I was going to start anywhere today, I would start with learning about enrollment and how that works. You don't really even need to go as far as learning about autopilot or anything like that. You just have to sort of understand, what does it mean to do an Azure AD join? What does it mean to do an Intune join or Endpoint Manager? I'll keep saying Intune even though I mean Endpoint Manager, just so people are aware of what I'm talking about. And once you've got people enrolled, that's when you can start looking at, well, let's do a small policy change. So let's maybe do just Windows updates through Intune. So we're going to disable Windows update management through the RMM, and we're going to start doing Windows update management through Intune. You know, there's challenges around that as in the reporting disappears, but what we've found is we've transitioned across to Microsoft managing the updates. No one's actually come to me and said, hey, I need a report on all the Windows updates of my operating systems. No one's missing those reports. They don't like them. They don't read them. What they actually want is the service delivered consistently. So that's where we've started. I think once you've got the enrollment stuff, then you can start thinking about, well, what are the use cases that you need it for? I think a lot of the stuff that Robert's talked about too is around there's a lot of security and compliance stuff, but just putting out a simple enabling BitLocker on all devices, or even just using it as an asset management register, like you can get most of the information you need, serial numbers, et cetera, out of Intune. So even just using it for that is, you know, a pretty good step in the right direction. You can see what devices are being registered to which users, and you know, and then you can start looking at pushing out apps and doing those sorts of things. But you can't do any of this stuff until you enroll. So if I was starting today, I'd say to anyone, just learn about enrollment, start enrolling every device in your fleet into this, you know, set up your own tenant, set up a test tenant, you know, muck around in there. So if you break something, you know, you don't lose a customer over it. But for the most part, you can't really go wrong by enrolling everyone into Intune today.
So what a lot of people may not realize is that Office 365 actually comes with some very, very basic device management. Now, the limitation of that is that it really isn't something you can target at a particular operating system. It's very generic and applies as best it can to devices in general. It's not very specific around application management, so it does have a lot of limitations, but it is included and can be used typically to, you know, wipe a device that is enrolled if need be. So typically, as Brenton mentioned, you want to make sure you enroll the devices in Azure AD. Then you have something like Endpoint Manager, which will then allow the handoff of the device management to Intune, where you go in and create, you know, policies. Now, I think that one of the biggest challenges with something like Intune is that you're now looking at managing, you know, iOS, Android, and Windows 10 devices. You're also talking about managing all of those devices with multiple policies. And I think that's where you need to have your documentation, or you need to have a good structure before you go into this, because it's very easy, I think, to get out of control and have, you know, conflicts and do all this sort of thing. So I think the first step probably is, after you do the Azure AD join, you've got it in the environment, as Brenton has said, with the benefits there, is then to make sure that you do have good documentation around, you know, what policies you want to set up. Now, my advice is generally you want to start with compliance policies that, for example, will make sure that phones and devices aren't jailbroken and they have device encryption, as mentioned. Then you look at configuration policies and so on. But in your experience, Brenton, with all those potential policies on those operating systems, how did you sort of approach that? Did you do it in a way that was, are we going to do all the devices, or we're going to do Windows 10 first and then iOS and Android, or we're going to do compliance first and then configuration? What was your sort of method of attack rolling this sort of thing out?
Yeah, so we now just enroll everyone in Intune. So that's our method of attack. Every Windows device must be enrolled in Intune now. I don't care what sort of customer it is. We're waiting for the Lighthouse, Microsoft 365 Lighthouse thing to come out and see what that's all going to be about. But we think in the future, you know, 3-year life on the device or a 4-year life on the device, then we need to make sure that, so we got 3 or 4 year life. We need to make sure that that device doesn't need to be then enrolled again. So I think once you've got everything enrolled and you're starting to think about policies and how you're going to roll these out, one of the things that one of the mistakes we made was not thinking clearly around groups and how, because everything in Intune isn't assigned to a user or a device, it's assigned to a group. You should never assign individual permissions anyway. As a general rule, you should always have a group and then assign a group to permissions and whatever. That's just IT 101. But we didn't really think about how we're going to do that. So we've had a bit more experience in the field. And like, for example, we might have an app like Adobe Pro that only, say, a third of the people in the organization have a full license for. So we have a Intune WIN file that gets packaged up and deployed through Intune that will install on all of those devices automatically. It's about a 2 gig something download, so it's quite a big package to deploy. So we need to make sure that we're not just pushing that down to every device and then people are opening it up and they're not licensed and they have all these problems. So where you have a Intune dash Adobe Pro licensed assigned group, and then we assign people into that group. Anyone in that group then gets assigned to the app in Windows 10. So they don't have to worry about anything. It's just we know, because we assign all the Adobe licenses, who should have Adobe, and then we just update that group, and then the group automatically pushes out that to whatever device. If their device dies and they need a new one, they just open it up and starts downloading Adobe and installs it all automatically again. So I'd think quite carefully around your groups. You really don't want to be assigning all users or all devices. That's not a best practice at all. It's really, we had Steve on the show a while back and he says that's a cardinal sin. You should never do that. So that's one thing. One of the ways we get around that is we have a licensed group where we will license everyone using a group. So we'll set up an assigned group. We'll add all the users that should have an Intune license. Then we'll assign the license using the group. So there's a feature in groups in Azure AD that allows you to do that. And then that group is what we use for stuff that everyone should have. So for example, we use, Adobe Reader is a good one. Everyone gets Adobe Reader. So the everyone group, for lack of a better word, all gets that, or the assigned licenses group is what we call it. So everyone gets that. So that's all standard, but there's always going to be those apps that only some people get and other people don't. And that's where you've got to really think about your groups. You don't want to have group dash Robert, Intune dash Robert, and then you're like, oh, well, what is that group? You know, then you got to figure out what is that group. So, you know, having that naming and thinking about that up front is really helpful. And the other thing I'd say is just keep it really simple at the start. So just think, well, what is it that is time consuming on your end that you want to get sorted or is particularly important to the customer? So they have certain requirements. Get that done first and then build it out over time and continue to build it out over time. You don't have to do it all at once. It might be a bit daunting if you do that. But if you start at one problem and you work your way out, you'd be surprised how many problems you can solve with the platform.
Yeah, I think it's a case of obviously doing a softly approach. There are lots and lots of options and lots of situations where you can get conflicts and you can get frustration. So I think one of the things for people to appreciate is that if you do everything at once with Intune, you're going to end up with conflicts which are very hard to debug and necessarily work out where the crossover is. That's why a staged approach is a very a good way to do that and prevent you pulling your hair out. And again, having good documentation around what you do, what changes you make, because the impact of those obviously can flow out to devices and it may not pick those changes up immediately. So devices don't necessarily reflect those policy changes immediately. They have to check back in with the internet and with Intune to get those updates. So again, just be obviously aware of that. So in your case, how long do you feel it took you to satisfactorily get the client to the level or the client's devices to the level that you were comfortable with? What sort of time period did that entail?
Look, we did this over a period of say 12 to 18 months. We originally were using a different mobile device management solution for iOS and Android, and it wasn't really cutting the mustard. We already had Intune sort of semi-deployed, but we weren't using it. And I went to the CEO and said, look, I've read up on the Intune. It's going to do a much better job than what we have now. We're already licensed for it. Let's just use this. And he was like, yep, all right, whatever. So then we learned about iOS and supervised devices, and we went and bought a Mac. So for those who haven't done that before, having a Mac makes it a lot easier to company-own devices. iOS and Apple TV devices and whatever can all be enrolled using a Mac, using Apple Configurator 2, and then pushed up to Intune. So we did that, and then we started looking at, well, what is it that we really want on the devices? So yeah, we wanted update policies. So we apply update policies. So when iOS 14 was coming out, we can freeze it at iOS 13, get our comms together, make sure there's no glitches at launch. There's always like iOS 14.01 that comes out 2 days later after they found all the problems. So we could put a freeze on that, and then we can say, all right, we're happy with iOS 14 now. We want you to deploy it out on the weekends or on a Wednesday afternoon or whatever, around what the business needs. So I think that's one thing that we set up that was really quite easy. The other thing was the Apple, so business.apple.com sync. So once you've set all of that up, it's a bit of mucking around with Apple to get the account, and every company's got to set up their own account. They need a Dun & Bradstreet number, and it's like it's a bit of mucking around. But once it's set up, now it's like a customer says, oh, we want to do this. We need this app. So we had one where it was the employee assistance app. So that's the when you ring up and you want to talk about stuff that's happening in your life and get some counseling. They wanted that on everyone's phone, everyone's company phone. So we logged in, bought 100 licenses of it for free. That syncs into Intune. We just force the sync in Intune, pops up, and then we assign it to the group. And then everyone in the company, automatically, it just downloads. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to think about it. You know, we can push other optional apps into the company portal. So now when we're trying to do support with people, rather than trying to say, okay, go to the Apple store and do you have an Apple ID and this and that, we just say, hey, just give us half an hour. We're going to push that app into the company portal, make that available to you and whoever. They log in. They just use their mobile phone. And just go click and download the app, and it just downloads the app. They don't need to put in credentials. They don't have to do anything. They just have to have their Office 365 credentials to log into the company portal app, and then that's all done. So I think in particular, we haven't really done Android yet, but iOS is, once it's set up, it works really, really well. And I think this is where, is particularly if you have company-owned phones, and you want to do supervision and you want to do that. So, you know, if one of the advantages of supervised devices known for unsupervised or what I'd call BYOD class devices, even if they're owned by the company or whatever, they're not supervised, is if they're lost, you can click on a lost mode. It will locate that device. It shows on the screen lost mode, lost mode, lost mode. You can put on the company phone number on the screen, and someone can call up and say, hey, we found this iPhone. Or if they do find it's useless to them, because it's a company-owned device, we have full control over it. And the Apple ecosystem makes that really nice. So, yeah, if you are going down that path, like the management of the iOS devices is probably the best experience we've had. As far as using Intune, it's just it just works so well. We just don't have issues with it at all. We've never really had issues with it. There's probably only one thing that we've had, which is the user-based licensing versus device-based licensing. You always want to use device-based licensing in small business. That's what Apple recommends in the fine print of their Apple manual. And in Intune, it defaults to user-based licensing. So it will just fail, and it won't tell you why. And then once you figure out, oh, you've got to change it from user to device-based licensing, then everything just works as it should. So we found that to be really, really nice.
Excellent. All right. Well, you know, it takes a little bit, obviously, to get your head around what Intune is, how it works, and all the options, and then obviously to create the appropriate policies and, you know, work out some nuances between Apple and Android and that sort of thing. But once you've got it working, obviously, it's a big benefit for the organization, also for the management side of it as well. So do you see that it's something that you are regularly having to adjust, or do you think it's sort of a set forget scenario? So when you create your policies, basically you sort of apply them once and the organization is good to go. Or is it a case that you have to go back in and say, look, you know, we're going to have to create a new set of policies for these users because they need an exemption for this, this, and this? Sort of what's your experience when it comes to, you know, the ongoing maintenance, you know, of the environment?
I think this is one of the good things about Intune, actually, because if you have a small customer that has simple needs, you know, you might want to enforce BitLocker encryption and a few other, like what I would call no impact security changes that are not going to impact user experience, aren't going to conflict with programs that they're installing on the operating system, etc. If you install those and then check it every year or 2 years, it's all just going to work. So, you know, Windows updates, for example, they generally just work when it's coming from Intune. So you don't have to go in and micromanage it like you might need to in an RMM. And particularly with the Apple stuff, most of the policies are fairly evergreen in that respect. But if you have a bigger customer that's, say, 20 to 50 to 100 seats, you're going to be in there all the time anyway, and it might be time that you used to spend in your RMM doing things, whatever, but now you're like, okay, well, there's a new version of this app and it doesn't auto-update for whatever reason. We need to push that out. Pushing that out through Intune and then having a nice graph on who's got it and who hasn't got it, and being able to just monitor that and keep an eye on it is probably something you're going to do. And probably the number one thing that we're starting to do now, even with every customer, is when they enroll, we want to push down Office, we want to push down Chromium Edge, so New Edge, and we want to push down any other big files that need to happen. So we push down Chocolaty, which is a package manager. I don't know how to explain that to Windows people, but essentially it does third-party app installs and patching using PowerShell. So we push all of those things down and we get the bulk of the downloads done. So as soon as someone gets a device, it'll already have Office on it, the correct version of Office. We'll block all the macros by default because we have that in our Office install file. We're going to push down, you know, it's going to automatically configure OneDrive, for example. So now our OneDrive policy that we've set up, it goes in, it silently signs people into OneDrive, backs up their home drive and directory. And it's got to the point now with where we had to get a whole bunch of people off domain join devices. We jump on there, we upload the hardware hash to the cloud into autopilot. We'd reset the device, the customer would log in, would reset the device. As soon as they turned the device back on, it would prompt, hey, welcome to ABZ Corporation. We would like you to sign in. Now, if you really want to, you can actually assign that device to a user. So it just says, oh, hi, Robert, just enter your password. So you don't even have to put your username and password. That's going to set all those out-of-the-box experience settings for them, and it's going to start downloading all the apps. Everything's going to be done, and then you're just in there sort of helping them maybe get email signatures right. So we'll restore email signatures for them, and we'll just do some of those things that are a bit tricky to do in Intune. But like a lot of those problems are even being solved at the moment. So we can get a user functional. They can go down. We had another example. They went down to Harvey Norman and needed a device, you know, to get one with Windows Pro on it. They sign in and all of the apps and everything come down. We can even push our RMM down, although we haven't, but we could using Intune. So at any time, doesn't matter what's happening in the world, a user can grab any computer, enroll it into the company, and then happy days. And they don't need a technician to spend 3 hours in the office, you know, printer drivers, etc. All of these things can be pushed down and then updated and managed using Intune. That's been really good for us because our RMM software doesn't do that stuff particularly well. It's not as good as Intune. Intune, you just basically say all these devices need this app and it just happens, or all these users, even better, it's actually all these users need this app. And it's not about trying to manage the device anymore. It's about trying to say, all right, this user's now on this computer, they need Adobe Pro, bang, it's installed. I didn't have to worry about it, or bang, it's available in the portal. Hey, I need this. Great, just click install. Oh, don't you need admin? No, don't need admin because it's an approved app in the store. So just those sorts of things just make such an impact on the user experience. And the customer that we went full into, this is what we're doing, about 25 staff, something like that. They're so happy. We don't have all the idiosyncrasies of RMMs anymore, of, you know, oh, it won't do an update and whatever, and it blocks all automatic updates with group policy somehow, and then the devices don't update, and they're always out of the service pack range, and like, all these problems have gone away because we've just adopted the Microsoft stack, and now it's working really well. So that's what we've found that works really well.
So given your experiences then and the shift towards the, you know, modern device management and deployment using Intune and Endpoint Manager, if there are people out there who are hesitant to, get into this world, or, basically don't appreciate the power of it and what's possible, what would your advice be to them if they're sort of sitting on the sidelines at the moment, umming and ahhing about, using Intune Endpoint Device Manager to do all this sort of stuff?
Oh, I think it starts with a conversation and having a real, finding a real useful use case. So for us, we have a client that changes their mind on apps all the time, is always installing newest, greatest app on everything. They want this, they want to do that. But we probably deploy an app every 1 to 2 weeks for these guys, right? And now this was becoming quite onerous because they're hiring all the time, and then got a marketing person that's doing things and all of that sort of thing. So for us, the time saving that we're getting from deploying stuff through Intune has more than paid for itself in setting up the solution and supporting it. And they're quite they've got quite tight timelines because it's such a fast moving company. So they want things done as soon as possible. So being able to just say, half an hour, it's on your device, those sorts of things, less phone calls, less that. So I'd start with a really compelling use case like that. I think a lot of people might start with the security stuff, but the security stuff's really hard to sell in SMB. Often it's trying to sell that agility and productivity and, hey, by the way, you're going to be a lot more secure with our solution because of these reasons. It's generally not the first thing they want to buy unless they've been breached very recently. Usually they're trying to buy, how do I get an edge? How does everyone work better? How are my employees happier? And it must be secure. They're not generally leading with security conversation. So if you have a customer that's like that and loves the security and wants to do that, great. This is a great use case for that. There's not really RMM products that do that stuff particularly well, and Intune is out on its own in that thing. But you could also just have customers who, they're concerned that with the work from home and no office and no spare laptops, if you can tell them a story about going down to Harvey Norman, picking up a laptop, and then, having their managing director up and going, or having a senior leadership team, someone on the senior leadership team up and going in an hour or so, because it's all just automatic. And they don't need a tech on site, they don't need all of this, and all their files are already going to just pop up and all of that sort of stuff. Like all the devices are going to be backed up. That's probably another good one to think about as a use case, even if you just use it to use the OneDrive policy to back up everything. Again, very difficult to do with an RMM tool, but something that's very easily done. It's, it's a 5-minute job to set up the policy, and then once that policy's set, you don't really have to do anything about it. So that's where I'd start if I was thinking about it.
All right. Now, have you had an opportunity to play with the, the dedicated endpoint security policies and the baselines that Microsoft have released around Windows 10, Edge, and, also Defender ATP as yet? So in the endpoint manager space, we have the Intune policy. So we have compliance, we have configuration, we have, app deployment and configuration policies. Now we've also got dedicated endpoint security policies as well. And with those come some baselines from Microsoft. Have you had a look at those or played with those at all yet, Brenton?
I haven't gone too far down that path. So the security baseline's really good, though. Like, they'll tell you exactly what it's doing, which is really good. And then you can customize security baselines to what you need. So it's not a case of you put on the security baselines, nothing works, so you're going to take off all the security baselines. Like, it tells you exactly what you what the setting should be. And if you have specific nuances in your environment that where that doesn't make sense, then you can adjust the security baselines to that. So we haven't gone too far down that path. It's definitely on the radar. I know there's some nuances around Windows 10 Enterprise versus Windows 10 Pro or Windows 10 Business. I think the attack surface reduction stuff is only in the enterprise SKUs, or most of that is only in the enterprise SKUs. We're looking at Microsoft 365 Defender, whatever one it's called now. They keep changing the names, Robert. You're probably all over it, but I've deployed that in. I'm just seeing how that's going and how are we going to monitor these at scale, and like that's sort of the challenge that we're having at the moment of how do we get all these alerts working and you know, and the reporting working and all of that. So that's probably the challenge, but I think Lighthouse will come in and solve a lot of those problems. So I'm not overly investing in it, but it's very, very good in that respect. You don't have to sit there and think, oh, what would Korsh do? What would Robert do? Like, Microsoft tells you exactly what it should be. And then it's your job to make sure that that's compatible with the environment. And if it's not, then change it. But I'd say it's going to require a bit of time on your part just to understand what settings are being applied. And you may want to do this in waves too. So things like BitLocker, you're not going to ever really have issues with BitLocker unless you're using some third-party BitLocker type competitor thing that no one uses. You know, that's the only time you're really going to have problems with that. But there's other stuff that will be a bit more impactful on the users, and you need to be aware of what these settings actually do before you go on just setting them up in customers' environments. So I'd say that takes a little bit more effort, and I'd definitely be looking at it, but it's probably a next step once you've got your head around the interface, you've deployed a few apps and you've sort of got maybe OneDrive syncing properly. And like you've done some of the simple things and then you start looking at, okay, well, we want to do security properly. Here's what Microsoft and the security community say is the best thing to do. I'm going to learn what all these settings to do. And then I'm going to say, well, which ones I'm going to standardize across all my customers. And then I'm going to roll that out. And then that's your life going to be a lot more simplified, because again, an RMM software as a general rule doesn't really provide that level of assurance.
So just to clarify that ASR attack surface reductions are available basically in Pro and Enterprise. You can also do it manually using PowerShell or doing it in the registry. I think that's a very important setting for people to go and set. So again, go and have a look at attack surface reduction and implement it as soon as you can across your fleet, even if you don't have things enrolled in Azure AD as yet. I would suggest to you also that in new tenants that an approach, a best practice approach now would be to apply the baselines first, get those working, then do the individual endpoint manager policies to fill in any gaps, and then use Intune to fill in any further gaps that aren't covered by those policies. Intune you'll certainly be using to do the configuration and also the deployment of your apps, but on the security side, I'd be starting with the baselines first and then working backwards. The good thing is that every user, every tenant has access to the endpoint manager, but the ability to push out policies requires an Intune style license, which comes with Microsoft 365 Business Premium or the EMS suite. Typically you can buy it as an add-on, but generally you're looking at Microsoft 365 Business Premium to get all these goodies and lots of options, lots and lots of things to configure and fiddle with, good documentation, and also a structured approach, I think, is what will lead to success. My general advice would be is to play with stuff in a test tenant or in your own
tenant first before you go and deploy it to a customer, because you can end up with situations that you deploy a policy not appreciating the impact it can have on lots and lots of devices. So another good piece of advice from me is to make sure that you've got a break glass account, an account that doesn't that isn't included in any policy. So if you do have an issue or you do something untoward, you can always log in with that account and undo that sort of thing. So again, just be aware of that, but certainly worth investigating, worth investing time. And as obviously Brenton's experienced, it is the modern approach. It's going to keep improving, enhanced by Microsoft, add more and more features. So the sooner that you get into it, the sooner you implement it, the better off you'll be. And also for those who still want to integrate or do hybrid, we can do hybrid deployments where you do have some control by Intune and Endpoint Manager and also some group policy. Not recommended generally, but it is possible if you want to do that. So all of that is possible. All right, well, I think that our time is pretty much up, Brenton. So thank you for sharing that. Now, can you just let people know how they can get contact with you if they do have any further follow-up questions or want some more information about how you've approached this deployment?
Yeah, so if people want to reach out on Twitter, I'm @ContactBrenton. You can find me on the internet at brentonjohnson.com. I have all my contact details there, and uptakedigital.com.au. If you can't find me any other way, you can find my phone number and email me on there. And more than happy to have a chat and just see where you're going and how you're thinking about it, because it's quite a big... it's quite a big, powerful tool, and it's a bit intimidating, even for me who's been using it for 12, 18 months now. I'm still a little bit intimidated by some of the features that it has and rolling it out. So always happy to have a conversation with people and see how they're doing things.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, I'll thank Brenton for his time, and I'll also take this opportunity to thank everybody who's been listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.